Okay, brethren, well, here we are once again upon God's Sabbath, and once again continuing our reading and a little bit of occasional comment through the book of Genesis. Last time we got as far as the story of Lot and the events surrounding the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah. Quite, I think, a notable event at that time. And we shouldn't look on this as being one isolated small incident that happened quietly and unknown. It's almost certain that people for 100 miles in every direction, tens of thousands or millions of people, were familiar with what took place here and knew the destruction and the complete obliteration of the towns and cities in the plain. So now we're continuing in chapter 20 of Genesis, and here we read, "And Abraham journeyed from there to the south, and dwelt between Kadesh and Shur, and sojourned in Gerar. Now Abraham said of Sarah his wife, 'She is my sister.'" This sounds a bit familiar. I think we came across a similar incident a few chapters earlier. "And Abimelech, king of Gerar, or Gerar, sent and took Sarah." Sarah, it seems, was still an attractive woman, although she was somewhere around about 90 years of age. "And Abimelech," and that's just a title that the kings of Gerar took. It's similar to Pharaoh. You have many, many pharaohs, and of course you would have many Abimelechs. I think we come across some others later. "But God said to Abimelech in a dream by night," or came to Abimelech in a dream by night, "and said to him, 'Indeed, you are a dead man because of the woman whom you have taken, for she is a man's wife.' But Abimelech had not come near her, and he said, 'Lord, will you slay a righteous nation also?'" And it's quite likely that Abimelech was very familiar with the recent events in Sodom and Gomorrah, and he knew perhaps that Jehovah God had destroyed and wiped out those nations, and he was thinking, "Whoops, I think I'm in for a similar fate. Did he not say to me, 'She's my sister'? And she, even she herself, said, 'He's my brother. In the integrity of my heart and innocence of my hands, I have done this. Don't blame me, Jehovah.' I mean, they told me that she was okay to take. She was just his sister. And God said to him in a dream, 'Yes, I know that you did this in the integrity of your heart, for I also withheld you from sinning against me. Therefore, I did not let you touch her or molest her.'" So God had intervened and actually kept Abimelech away from Sarah. So God, in a sense, was providing protection for both Abraham and Sarah, and indeed also Abimelech, because had he touched her, he was a dead man. "Now therefore, restore the man's wife, for he is a prophet." And I think that's the only time that Abraham is referred to as such, but Abraham, in God's eyes, was a prophet. "And he will pray for you, and you shall live. But if you do not restore her, know that you shall surely die, you and all who are yours." So I guess that'd be quite a strong incentive to Abimelech. Well, you either keep her, in which case you won't get much fun because you'll be dead, plus your entire family, or you restore her. "So Abimelech rose early in the morning," and remember, this was an event by night, so as soon as daylight arrived, he was off and into action, "called all his servants and told all these things in their hearing, and the men were very afraid." Remember that if they were familiar with the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah, they knew that this particular divine being, this particular God of Abraham, was able to destroy quite easily and in very large numbers. So they were very afraid. "And Abimelech called Abraham and said to him, 'What have you done to us? How have I offended you that you have brought on me and on my kingdom a great sin? You have done deeds to me that ought not to be done.'" And I think we can understand that people in these days, they knew what sin was. Sodom and Gomorrah knew what sin was. They sinned greatly before the Eternal. And Pharaoh knew that he would have sinned had he slept with Sarai. And here Abimelech knew what sin was. It wasn't as some people would try to state, that the law didn't exist until Mount Sinai. The laws of God were fairly well known, and people knew right from wrong, in most instances, way back in these days. It didn't mean they did what was right, of course, but at least they knew what was right, just like today. I mean, in the Church of God, there are many people who know what is right and what is wrong, but very often, due to weakness or other reasons, they'll choose what is wrong. But the knowledge is there, and the knowledge was possessed by Abimelech. Then Abimelech said to Abraham, verse 10, what did you have in view that you have done this thing? And Abraham said, because I thought, surely the fear of God is not in this place, and they will kill me on account of my wife. And so Abraham was fearful, which really he ought not to have been, and he took into his own hands, if you like, the way he would protect himself. And again, perhaps he would have been wiser to have trusted in God. But indeed, he says in some slight justification, she is truly my sister. She's a daughter of my father, as I am, but not the daughter of my mother. And she became my wife. So she's my half-sister. So I guess Abraham's saying, well, it's just a sort of a white lie, really. She is sort of my sister. And it came to pass, verse 13, when God caused me to wander from my father's house, that I said to her, this is your kindness that you should do for me. In every place, wherever we go, say of me, he is my brother. Then Abimelech took sheep, oxen, and male and female servants, and gave them to Abraham. And he restored Sarah, his wife, to him. So Abraham actually ends up rather better off. He's now got additional sheep, extra oxen, and a few more servants. And remember, from a few chapters ago, he was one of the wealthiest men to start with, greatly and abundantly blessed by God. And Abimelech said, see, my land is before you. Dwell where it pleases you. I mean, feel free, Abraham. If you like a valley over here or up in the pastures over there, please, by all means, just pick and choose your spot. Then to Sarah he said, behold, I have given your brother 1,000 pieces of silver. Indeed, this vindicates you before all who are with you and before all others. Thus she was reproved. So Abraham prayed to God, and God healed Abimelech, his wife, and his maidservants. Then they bore children, for the Eternal had closed up all the wombs of the house of Abimelech because of Sarah, Abraham's wife. So there'd been nobody pregnant, nobody born in this household for quite some time. Chapter 21. And the Eternal visited Sarah as he had said, and the Eternal did for Sarah as he had spoken. For Sarah conceived and bore Abraham a son in his old age, at the set time of which God had spoken to him. And Abraham called the name of his son who was born to him, whom Sarah bore to him, Isaac, which means laughter. And remember that both Abraham and Sarai had laughed for different reasons when they'd heard the news. Verse 4, then Abraham circumcised his son Isaac when he was 8 days old, as God had commanded him. And as I've mentioned before, 8 days appears to be the very best time for a male to be circumcised, because of the agents and the blood circulation that help you heal more rapidly at day 8 than at day 6 or 5 years old or 30 years old. Verse 5, now Abraham was 100 years old when his son Isaac was born to him. And remember, Sarah was 90, I think. And Sarah said, God has made me laugh, so that all who hear will laugh with me. So she was now, you can imagine, Abraham now had a son of Sarah, his beloved wife. And Sarah, after 90 years, of which she'd been barren, since they got married, whenever that was, perhaps 60, 70 years earlier, it's a long time to wait for a child, and now she must have been, cock-a-hoop. Verse 7, she also said, who would have said to Abraham that Sarah would nurse children? For I have borne him a son in his old age. And it says that Sarah would nurse children, so I guess if she nursed him, that means she was able to produce milk. and so on. So at 90 years old, to have a child and also suckle him, I guess her youth was indeed renewed like the eagles. Verse 8. So the child grew and was weaned, probably around about 2 years old, and Abraham made a great feast on the same day that Isaac was weaned. And Sarah saw the son of Hagar, the Egyptian, whom she had borne to Abraham, scoffing. Therefore she said to Abraham, "Cast out this bondwoman and her son, for the son of this bondwoman shall not be heir with my son, namely with Isaac." And so we see a certain amount of family difficulties here, almost predictable. Now Sarah looks at Ishmael with some suspicion. Well, hang on a second. Why should that bondwoman, why should her son stay around here? He's going to try and take over from Isaac. He's the firstborn, and of course, there'd be no question that Abraham was very, very fond of his son Ishmael. therefore, you know, she wanted to boot out Ishmael, get rid of him. He's not going to be here and compete with my son. Verse 11, and the matter was very displeasing in Abraham's sight because of his son. You know, he had great affection for him. But God said to Abraham, "Do not let it be displeasing in your sight because of the lad or because of your bondwoman. Whatever Sarah has said to you, listen to her voice, for in Isaac your seed shall be called. Yet I will also make a nation of the son of the bondwoman, because he is your seed." So because it's your family, Abraham, you know, you can send him away and actually bless him and make him into a strong and powerful nation, because he's of your flesh. He's your son. So Abraham rose early in the morning and took bread and a skin of water, and putting it on her shoulder, he gave it and the boy to Hagar and sent her away. Then she departed and wandered in the wilderness of Beersheba. And the water in the skin was used up, and she placed the boy under one of the shrubs. Then she went and sat down across from him at a distance of about a bow shot. I guess that'd be perhaps 30, 40, 50 yards, 100 yards. For she said to herself, "Let me not see the death of the boy." So she sat opposite him and lifted her voice and wept. So they'd wandered off into the wilderness, run out of water, nowhere nearby they could find any help or support. These were not the days when there were Holiday Inns and travel lodges and things. She's really lost now in the wilderness, and just going to lie down and die of dehydration and so on. Verse 17, and God heard the voice of the lad. Then the angel of God called to Hagar out of heaven and said to her, "What ails you, Hagar? Fear not, for God has heard the voice of the lad where he is. Arise, lift up the lad and hold him with your hand, for I will make him a great nation." And God opened her eyes, and she saw a well of water, which she couldn't see before God miraculously gave her this insight or understanding. Then she went and filled the skin with water and gave the lad a drink. So God was with the lad, and he grew and dwelt in the wilderness and became an archer. He dwelt in the wilderness of Paran, and his mother took a wife for him from the land of Egypt. And so you can understand that Ishmael's descendants would be very much Egyptian, wouldn't they? Because, well, his father was Abraham, his mother was an Egyptian, and then his wife was an Egyptian, so pretty much an Egyptian-oriented a bunch of descendants came from Ishmael. Verse 22. And it came to pass at that time that Abimelech, whom we read about a few moments ago, and Phicol, the commander of his army, spoke to Abraham, saying, "God is with you in all that you do." And I guess, if you think about it, the fact that Abraham at 100 had produced a son, and Sarah, whom Abimelech obviously knew, at 90 had produced a son, was again probably quite well known. The local newspapers would be full of it, because 100-year-old man produces a son, 90-year-old lady produces a son and suckles him. So there's no question that the God of Abraham was well known to be a particularly powerful deity. God is with you in all that you do. Now therefore, swear to me by God that you will not deal falsely with me, with my offspring, or with my posterity, but that according to the kindness that I have done to you, you will do to me, and to the land in which you have sojourned. Because, you know, you've been living among some of my people and under my sort of jurisdiction, so please. And whether they were still thinking back to Sodom and Gomorrah at this point and still a bit worried about just what this God of Abraham might do if he was annoyed. But anyway, carrying on, verse 24, and Abraham said, I will swear. Then Abraham reproved or rebuked Abimelech because of a well of water which Abimelech's servants had seized. And I guess we can understand that in a country like that, perhaps a fairly hot country, that having wells of water was quite important. You would water your camels and provide water for your sheep and water for yourselves, and perhaps there would be disputes over water rights and things of that nature. So it looks like Abimelech's servants had stolen or anyway seized this particular well which Abraham believed belonged to him. And Abimelech said, I do not know who has done this thing. You did not tell me, nor had I heard of it until today. So Abraham took sheep and oxen and gave them to Abimelech, and the two of them made a covenant or a treaty. And you would probably do that by taking animals and cutting them up, and the blood would be a sign of the covenant. And Abraham set 7 ewe lambs of the flock by themselves. Then Abimelech asked Abraham, but what is the meaning of these 7 ewe lambs which you have set by themselves? And he said, you will take these 7 ewe lambs from my hand, that they may be my witness that I have dug this well. Therefore he called that place Beersheba, which means well of the oath, or well of the 7, there being 7 lambs, and because the two of them swore an oath there. Thus they made a covenant at Beersheba. So Abimelech rose with Phicol, the commander of his army, and they returned to the land of the Philistines. Then Abraham planted a tamarisk tree in Beersheba, and there called in the name of the Eternal, the Everlasting God. And Abraham sojourned in the land of the Philistines many days. Carrying on now in chapter 22. Now it came to pass after these things that God tested Abraham and said to him, Abraham, and he said, here I am. And he said, take now your son, your only son Isaac, whom you love, and go to the land of Moriah and offer him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains of which I shall tell you. So this is in many ways quite a severe test of Abraham. It's his only son, in the sense of it's the particular son through whom the blessings were to come, his only son by Sarah, and yet God says, I want you to take him off and offer him up as a burnt offering. And we can only wonder what went through Abraham's mind at this point. So Abraham rose early in the morning, didn't procrastinate, didn't sort of dilly-dally, didn't put it off and just ponder it for a few weeks. Got up pretty much straight away and saddled his donkey and took 2 of his young men with him and Isaac his son. And he split the wood for the burnt offering and arose and went to the place of which God had told him. Then on the third day, so it's taken 3 days for this journey, 3 days during which Abraham would have pondered about the death of his son, the offering up of his son, and of course we can see, I think, a parallel there that Jesus, the Son of God, was dead for 3 days, and no doubt the Father there had to reflect and ponder for 3 days on the death of his son. And here's Abraham, the father of the faithful, pondering the death of his son for 3 days. And Abraham said to his young men, stay here with the donkey. The lad and I will go yonder and worship, and we will come back to you. Now that's a very interesting passage or sentence there, which I've got underlined in my Bible. We will come back to you. In the margin I put faith! Because how could Abraham say, we will come back, when he knew that he was taking Isaac up to make him into a burnt offering? Well, the answer is that, you know, Abraham had faith that he would come back with his son, resurrected. And that was really an amazing level of faith for Abraham to have. He was prepared to go through with this, but he expected, absolutely. He was really, his faith talking there, okay, we're going up to that mountaintop there, and we'll be back soon. So Abraham, verse 6, took the wood of the burnt offering and laid it on Isaac his son. And you could argue, well, a bit like Jesus taking, you know, the wood of the stake on his back and carrying it off to his sacrifice. And he took the fire in his hand and a knife, and the two of them went together. But Isaac was a bit puzzled by all this. But Isaac spoke to Abraham his father and said, "My father." And he said, "Here I am, my son." And he said, "Look, the fire, we've got that, and the wood, we've got that, but where is the lamb for a burnt offering? You know, we can't have a burnt offering without the sacrifice. Where's that?" And Abraham said, "My son, God will provide for himself the lamb for a burnt offering." And of course, we can understand that God did himself ultimately provide, you know, a lamb, the Lamb of God, for all mankind. And the two of them went together. Then they came to the place of which God had told him, and Abraham built an altar there and placed the wood in order, and he bound Isaac his son and laid him on the altar upon the wood. And again, we can only imagine quite how all that happened. I suspect, you know, Isaac might have been big enough here to have seen off his father if a fight had ensued. We can only imagine that Isaac, a bit like Jesus Christ when he came, you know, voluntarily accepted what was taking place. And just as Jesus didn't fight his father, that Isaac probably didn't fight his father and just accepted and went along knowing that his father knew best. So I guess a good example, a very good example from Isaac there of being a son who knew, you know, how to obey and how to put trust in his dad. And interestingly, people do reckon that the geographical area where this took place was in fact modern Jerusalem, and that where Jesus himself was hung on that stake is pretty much the area where Abraham built this altar to you know, sacrifice his son. So many, many parallels. Verse 10, "And Abraham stretched out his hand and took the knife to slay his son." He was going to go through with it. "But the angel of the Eternal called to him from heaven and said, 'Abraham, Abraham.' And he said, 'Here I am.' And he said, 'Do not lay your hand on the lad or do anything to him. For now I know that you fear God, since you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me.' Then Abraham lifted his eyes and looked, and there behind him was a ram caught in a thicket by its horns. So Abraham went and took the ram and offered it up for a burnt offering instead of his son," which I think would be a huge relief to Isaac and a huge relief to Abraham too. He must have really been, again, dancing about with the happiness that things had worked out so well. And Isaac, no doubt, breathed a huge sigh of relief too. And God himself was pretty delighted that that Abraham had demonstrated in action a level of faith that probably you and I would really, really struggle with, which is why Abraham is called, you know, the father of the faithful. He didn't just talk faith, you know, he showed faith, and, you know, it's by your works, it says, that you shall know. And so Abraham, pretty good example here. Then Abraham called the name of the place the Eternal Will Provide, or Jehovah Jireh. As it is said to this day, in the mount of the Eternal it shall be provided. Then the angel of the Eternal called to Abraham a second time out of heaven and said, "By myself I have sworn, says the Eternal, because you have done this thing and have not withheld your son, your only son." So this is, you know, this is now the promise becomes unconditional. "Because you've done that, then I will do this." So it's now a unconditional promise that cannot be revoked. "Because you've done this thing and have not withheld your son, your only son. In blessing I will bless you, and in multiplying I will multiply your descendants as the stars of the heaven, and as the sand which is on the seashore. And your descendants shall possess the gate of their enemies. So here is the unconditional promise of race. I think we often, in the Church of God at least, talk of the promises of race and grace. That to Abraham and to his descendants, there were two huge promises of God which still apply right to this very day today. One promise was a promise of race, that Abraham's descendants would multiply into the millions and tens and hundreds of millions, like the stars of heaven and the sand, the grains of sand on the seashore. But also, another promise was a promise of grace, that through the line of Abraham would come a Savior who would bring salvation to the whole world. So two promises, race and grace. And here we see the promise of race, you know, multiply your descendants. But also verse 18, in your seed, singular, all the nations of the earth shall be blessed, because you have obeyed my voice. And that's talking of Jesus Christ. In the book of Galatians, we won't turn there, but the Apostle Paul explains very much about this particular verse and says, in your seed, meaning in your seed, Jesus Christ, all the nations of the earth, everyone shall be blessed. And of course, it's in Jesus that all nations will be blessed. So Abraham returned to his young men. Remember, he said, we'll be back. And of course they were waiting, and oh, there's Abraham. Oh, yes, look, there's Isaac. And of course they knew nothing, perhaps, of the events on the mountain. But there they came, you know, back to the young men. And they rose and went together to Beersheba, and Abraham dwelt at Beersheba. Verse 20. Now it came to pass after these things that it was told Abraham, saying, indeed, Milcah also has borne children to your brother Nahor. Whose? His firstborn. Booz, his brother. Whose and Booz? Good name for teddy bears. Kemuel, the father of Aram. Kesed, Hazel, Pildash, Jidlaf, and Bethuel. And Bethuel begot Rebekah. And so I guess we're just filling in some details here because of what transpires shortly. Now we see where Rebekah came from in Abraham's family. These eight Milcah bore to Nahor, Abraham's brother. His concubine, whose name was Rumah, also bore Tebah, Gaham, Phahash, and Maacah, or something similar. Chapter 23. Sarah lived 127 years. These were the years of the life of Sarah. So Sarah died in Kiriath Arba, that is Hebron, in the land of Canaan. And Abraham came to mourn for Sarah and to weep for her. And I think I mentioned before that we visited the town of Hebron. It's a few miles south of Jerusalem, and today an Arab town, and not particularly attractive from what I recollect of it. So Sarah died at 127 years old. And so we will know that Isaac must be about aged 37, because she was 90 when he was born, and she lived another 37 years, so Isaac will be about 36, 37, something like that. Then Abraham stood up from before his dead and spoke to the sons of Heth, saying, you know, I'm a foreigner and a sojourner among you. Give me property for a burial place among you, that I may bury my dead out of my sight. Because at this stage, Abraham didn't actually own any of the land. He was a sojourner, a visitor, an approved guest in the country. And the sons of Heth answered Abraham, saying, here is my lord, you're a mighty prince among us. And it would be true that Abraham was a very, very wealthy man. Remember, he had over 300 personal bodyguard, and many, many servants, and huge amounts of sheep and oxen and camels. So no doubt he occupied quite a lot of territory, but he didn't own any of it. Here is my lord, you're a mighty prince among us. Bury your dead in the choicest of our burial places. None of us will withhold from you his burial place, that you may bury your dead. I mean, we just recognize that you are a you know, you're a great man, really, a very powerful man, and we know that you're hugely blessed. You pick and choose any place you want. Then Abraham stood up and bowed himself to the people of the land, the sons of Heth, and he spoke with them, saying, If it is your wish that I bury my dead out of my sight, hear me, and meet with Ephron, the son of Zohar, for me, that he may give me the cave of Machpelah, which he has, which is at the end of his field. Let him give it to me at the full price, as property for a burial place among you. I want to buy the cave of Machpelah, and use that if I may. So would you please approach Ephron and you know, see if he'll do that. Now Ephron dwelt among the sons of Heth, and Ephron the Hittite answered Abraham in the presence of the sons of Heth, all who entered at the gate of his city, saying, No, my lord, hear me. I give you the field and the cave that is in it. I give it to you in the presence of the sons of my people. I give it to you. Bury your dead. Then Abraham bowed himself down before the people of the land, and he spoke to Ephron in the hearing of the people of the land, saying, If you will give it, please hear me. I will give you money for the field. Take it from me, and I will bury my dead there. So Abraham agreed, okay, I will take the field, but I will buy it. It's going to be legal. I'm going to pay, you know, the proper fee for it. And of course, this is, I think, Abraham's first legal possession of any of the land which God had promised to him. And Ephron answered Abraham, saying to him, My lord, listen to me. The land is worth 400 shekels of silver. What is that between you and me? So bury your dead. And Abraham listened to Ephron, and Abraham weighed out the silver for Ephron, which he had named in the hearing of the sons of Heth, 400 shekels of silver, currency of the merchants. And according to my margin, that's about $51,000, which would be about, what, £35,000. Sounds a fair amount of money for a field. Anyway, carrying on. So the field of Ephron, which was in Machpelah, which was before Mamre, the field and the cave which was in it, and all the trees that were in the field, which were within all the surrounding borders, were deeded to Abraham as a possession in the presence of the sons of Heth before all who went in at the gate of his city. So it was all, you know, properly done. All the solicitors and lawyers and estate agents all saw it took place, and the money changed hands, and Abraham became the legal possessor of this particular area and the cave of Machpelah. And today in Hebron, there is a sort of a large building over these caves, and you can go into the building and down underneath, and you can actually see these caves down a sort of a, it's like a tunnel you can look down, or a sort of a, like a well you look down, and you can see the caves at the bottom. And down there today, Abraham is buried there, and Sarah, and a few others down there. And after this, Abraham buried Sarah, his wife, in the cave of the field of Machpelah, before Mamre, that is, Hebron, in the land of Canaan. So the field and the cave that is in it were deeded to Abraham by the sons of Heth as property for a burial place. Chapter 24. Now Abraham was old, well advanced in age, and the Eternal had blessed Abraham in all things. So he's getting on a bit now, and I guess he's starting to think about Isaac, his son, and just seeing, if you like, the next phase of the plan. And he says to his oldest servant of his house, who ruled over all that he had, Please, put your hand under my thigh, and I'll make you swear by the Eternal, the God of heaven and the God of the earth, that you will not take a wife for my son from the daughters of the Canaanites among whom I dwell. But you shall go to my country and to my kindred and take a wife for my son Isaac. So he takes his most important servant, and the term servant might be misleading here. This man would be, you know, like executive over this huge, wealthy household. And this man would be a very trustworthy man, and really a very powerful individual within Abraham's household. And he wants him to go and do now a rather important job. And the servant said to him, Well, perhaps the woman will not be willing to follow me back to this land. Must I take your son back to the land from which you came? But Abraham said to him, "Beware that you do not take my son back there. The eternal God of heaven, who took me from my father's house and from the land of my kindred, and who spoke to me and swore to me, saying, 'To your descendants I give this land,' he will send his angel before you, and you shall take a wife for my son from there." And, okay, if the woman is not willing to follow you, then you'll be released from this oath. Only do not take my son back there. So quite sort of strong, Abraham. You go there, you find a woman, you know, God will go before you, and I'm sure he'll bless you, and it will work. But should something go wrong, and the young woman choose not to take him back, then fair enough. This particular oath that you're swearing, it's over. I won't hold you to it. So the servant put his hand under the thigh of Abraham his master, and swore to him concerning this matter. So the servant took 10 of his master's camels, and departed, for all his master's goods were in his hand. And he could write a check out for £500,000, no problem. He was that trusted by Abraham. And he arose and went to Mesopotamia, to the city of Nahor. And he made his camels kneel down outside the city by a well of water at evening time, the time when women go out to draw water. I guess it's much cooler then, and the sun's heat is gone, and it's much more pleasant, and so the time to go out with your buckets and the pails and so on and collect water from the well and then take it back and, I guess, prepare the evening meal and the drinks and so on and so forth. Then he said, "O eternal God of my master Abraham, please give me success this day and show kindness to my master Abraham. Behold, I stand here by the well of water, and the daughters of the men of the city are coming out to draw water. Now let it be that the young woman to whom I say, 'Please let down your pitcher that I may drink,' and she says, 'Drink, and I will also give your camels a drink,' let her be the one whom you have appointed for your servant Isaac. And by this I will know that you have shown kindness to my master." So he's quite a smart cookie, is this servant. And he says, "Look, I've got a little test here for you, God. I'm going to sort of have a look at these girls as they come out, and I'm going to sort of pick one of them, and I'm going to say this to her. And if she says this back to me, then that'll be a sign, and then I'll know that she's the one." Okay. And so as it happened, before he had finished speaking, so God was pretty fast here, that behold, Rebekah, who was born to Bethuel, son of Milcah, the wife of Nahor, Abraham's brother, came out with her pitcher on her shoulder. Now the young woman was very beautiful to behold, a virgin, no man had known her. So a very striking young woman. And she went down to the well, filled her pitcher, and came up. And the servant who spotted her and thought, "Yeah, she's nice looking." And he ran to meet her and said, and he's probably thinking, "I wonder if this is the one, or perhaps it's somebody else. Please, let me drink a little water from your pitcher." And he waits to see what happens. So she said, "Drink, my lord." Then she hastened, let her pitcher down to her hand, and gave him a drink. And when she had finished giving him a drink, she said, "I will draw water for your camels also, until they have finished drinking." And you got to think, well, there's probably quite a bit of work there. There were 10 camels, after all. And as I don't know a great deal about camels, but I know they can drink lots of water, because they go for weeks and weeks through the desert. And they can probably drink a few gallons apiece when they're thirsty. And there's 10 of them. You've got one pitcher. So she's sort of saying, "Well, I'll bring up some water for your camels, and we'll give them all a drink when they're finished." You know, so that implies that this young lady was, quite willing to help, quite willing to work, and, quite thoughtful of this man, very much thoughtful of his animals. So without telling us an awful lot more, we can see that Rebecca is a very nice young lady, not only good-looking, but a very pleasant attitude, a very much willing to help, and very giving attitude. Then she hastened and emptied her pitcher into the trough, ran back to the well to draw water, and drew for all his camels. And the man, wondering at her, remained silent, so as to know whether the Eternal had made his journey prosperous or not. So he's watching and just thinking, "Well, this seems too good to be true. Now, I asked this thing a few minutes ago, and lo and behold, he is a gorgeous young woman, and she's racing about here, giving water to all the camels. Could this be the answer to my prayer?" So it was, When the camels had finished drinking, that the man took a golden nose ring, weighing half a shekel, and two bracelets for her wrists weighing 10 shekels of gold, and said, "Whose daughter are you? Tell me, please, is there room in your father's house for us to lodge?" So he's got gold available. Must have made her eyes bat a little bit. So she said to him, "Well, I'm the daughter of Bethuel, Milcah's son, whom she bore to Nahor." Moreover, she said to him, "We have both straw and feed enough and room to lodge." So again, she's quite willing to look out for the needs of this man. Then the man bowed down his head and worshipped the Eternal, and he said, "Blessed be the Eternal God of my master Abraham, who has not forsaken his mercy and his truth toward my master. As for me, being on the way, the Eternal led me to the house of my master's brethren." I've gone right to the bullseye. So the young woman ran and told those of her mother's house these things. Now Rebekah had a brother whose name was Laban, and Laban ran out to the man by the well. What was motivating Laban, I'm not too sure. The good news, perhaps, or perhaps the gold nose ring and the gold bracelets. So it came to pass, when he saw the nose ring and the bracelets on his sister's wrists, when he heard the words of his sister Rebekah saying, "Thus the man spoke to me," that he went to the man. And there he stood by the camels at the well. And Laban said, "Come in, O blessed of the Eternal. Why do you stand outside? For I have prepared the house and a place for the camels." Then the man came to the house, and he unloaded the camels and provided straw and feed for the camels and water to wash his feet and the feet of the men who were with him. And food was set before him to eat, but he said, "I will not eat until I have told about my errand." And he said, "Speak on." So, you know, Laban looks like he's got a reasonable sized home, room for 10 camels and plenty of food and fodder and so on. So they're about to feed these people, but he says, "Nope, I've got something urgent. I must speak first. So when I've spoken, then I'll eat some of this food." So Laban says, "Well, okay, you know, carry on." Verse 34. So he said, "I'm Abraham's servant. The Eternal has blessed my master greatly, and he's become great." And I think we need to understand that great means pretty great. Abraham was the man that saw off the Assyrian generals, don't forget. And he has given him flocks and herds, silver, gold, male and female servants, camels, donkeys. And Sarah, my master's wife, bore a son to my master when she was old. And to him he has given all that he has. Now my master made me swear, saying, "You shall not take a wife for my son from the daughters of the Canaanites in whose land I dwell, but you shall go to my father's house and to my kindred and take a wife for my son." And I said to my master, "Well, perhaps the woman will not follow me." But he said to me, "The Eternal, before whom I walk, will send his angel with you and prosper your way. And you shall take a wife for my son from my kindred and from my father's house. You will be clear from this oath when you arrive among my kindred, for if they will not give her to you, then you will be released from my oath." But Abraham didn't expect that to happen, of course. "And this day," carries on the servant, "I came to the well and said, 'O Eternal God of my master Abraham, if you will now prosper the way in which I go, behold, I stand by the well of water. And it shall come to pass that when the virgin comes out to draw water, and I say to her, "Please give me a little water from your pitcher to drink," and she says to me, "Drink, and I will draw for your camels also," let her be the woman whom the Eternal has appointed for my master's son. But before I had finished speaking in my heart, there was Rebekah coming out with her pitcher on her shoulder. And she went down to the well and drew water, and I said to her, "Please let me drink." And she made haste and let her pitcher down from her shoulder and said, "Drink, and I will give your camels a drink also." So I drank, and she gave the camels a drink also. Then I asked her and said, "Whose daughter are you?" And she said, "The daughter of Bethuel, Nahor's son, whom Milcah bore to him." So I put the nose ring on her nose and the bracelets on her wrists, and I bowed my head and worshipped the Eternal and blessed the Eternal God of my master Abraham, who had led me in the way of truth to take the daughter of my master's brother for his son. Now, if you will deal kindly and truly with my master, tell me. And if not, tell me, that I may turn to the right hand or to the left. So he's told the whole story, put it right before them, and now he needs to know, you know, their answer. And then Laban and Bethuel answered and said, the thing comes from the eternal. We cannot speak to you either bad or good. I mean, if God's hand's in it that much, then woof, he's got to accept this. Here's Rebekah before you. Take her and go, and let her be your master's son's wife, as the eternal has spoken. And it came to pass, when Abraham's servant heard their words, that he worshipped the eternal, bowing himself to the earth. Then the servant brought out, even more. She'd already got two gold bracelets and a gold nose ring. Now there's plenty more suddenly appears. Then the servant brought out jewelry of silver, jewelry of gold, and clothing, and gave them to Rebekah. He also gave precious things to her brother and to her mother. So the whole family gets a lot of goodies here. Because don't forget, Abraham is a powerful prince. And, wealth is not a problem to Abraham. So there's plenty here to go around. And no doubt Abraham is more than happy to, in a sense, pass it back to his family. Particularly if a lovely young woman for his son is going to come back as the quid pro quo. Verse 54, and he and the men who were with him ate and drank and stayed all night. Then they arose in the morning, and he said, send me away to my master, let me go back now. But her brother and her mother said, let the young woman stay with us a few days, at least 10. After that she may go. And he said to them, no, do not hinder me, since the eternal has prospered my way. Send me away, so that I may go to my master. So, the servant is about business, isn't he? He was, don't forget, Abraham's right-hand man. And he doesn't mess about socializing. He's got a purpose. He's on a mission. He's delivered his message. He's had agreement. And now it's time to move on. He's not going to hang about and put his feet up and just watch some more TV for a while. And then they called, verse 57, so they said, we will call the young woman and ask her personally. Then they called Rebekah and said to him, will you go with this man? He said to her, will you go with this man? And she said, I will go. And so it looks like, at least in the culture of those days, that the agreement of the young woman was required. It wasn't just purely an arranged marriage. There was the opportunity, and I guess Rebekah could have said, nope, no way, Jose, I'm staying here. But perhaps she had a reason to want to get away from home. And of course, with all this gold and jewelry and expensive clothing that she'd been given, and recognizing that Abraham was a mighty prince, exceedingly wealthy, who was giving all that wealth to his son, she must have thought, this could be quite a decent deal. And of course, also, don't forget, she was a very giving young woman, very kind to the servant and to his animals, and no doubt she saw God's hand in it as well. I mean, there were just too many, if you like, miraculous coincidences here. So she was happy to go. She said, I will go. Verse 59, so they sent away Rebekah their sister and her nurse, or servant, and Abraham's servant and his men, and they blessed Rebekah and said to her, our sister, may you become the mother of thousands of ten thousands, and may your descendants possess the gates of those who hate them. Then Rebekah and her maids arose, and they rode on the camels and followed the man. So the servant took Rebekah and departed. Now Isaac came from the way of Beer Lahai Roi, for he dwelt in the south. And Isaac went out to meditate in the field in the evening. And he lifted his eyes and looked, and there the camels were coming. So he's out of an evening, and it's nice and quiet, and he's pondering and thinking about all the promises and the blessings and the strange things that had happened. And we've got to remember that for Abraham and people like Isaac, they had opportunities to learn a great deal about God's way, because strangely enough, Shem, I think, was still alive at this time. Remember Noah and Shem, Ham and Japheth? And Shem was born before the flood. Shem lived through the flood. Shem lived on for hundreds of years after the flood, and Shem lived at the same time as Abraham, and even for a number of years with Isaac. I think Shem died when Isaac was about a teenager. So it's quite possible that Abraham had spoken to Shem about the flood and pre-flood times. It's even possible that Isaac had met up with Shem at some stage. So there was a great deal of knowledge of God's ways still available to those who had eyes to see and ears to hear. Verse 64, then Rebekah lifted her eyes, and when she saw Isaac, she dismounted from her camel. For she had said to the servant, who is this man walking in the field to meet us? And the servant said, it is my master. So she took a veil and covered herself. And the servant told Isaac all the things that he had done. Then Isaac brought her into his mother Sarah's tent, and he took Rebekah, and she became his wife, and he loved her. So Isaac was comforted after his mother's death. Moving on now to chapter 25. Hey, making good progress today. Abraham again took a wife, and her name was Keturah. Abraham clearly quite vigorous still into his elder years. And she bore him Zimran, Jokshan, Medan, Midian, Ishbak, and Shua. Jokshan begot Sheba and Dedan, and the sons of Dedan were Ashurim, Letushim, and Leumim, which probably weren't actually the names of the sons, because Ashurim is the plural of Ashur, and Letushim is the plural of Letush, and Leumim the plural of Leum. The IM is just the Hebrew way that you make things into plurals. So probably Dedan was father to the tribes known as the Ashurs and the Letushes and the Leums. And the sons of Midian were Ephah, Epher, Hanok, Abida, and Eldah. All these were the children of Keturah. And Abraham gave all that he had to Isaac. So he had another wife here and other sons, and they had tribes coming from them. So if you like, Abraham had got Ishmael and all the tribes that came from Ishmael. Abraham had got Isaac, of course, currently with no offspring. But he had Keturah and her sons, who themselves had multiple sons and big families and tribes and nations. So it is indeed true that Abraham is the father of a whole host. But carry on. Abraham gave all that he had to Isaac. But Abraham gave gifts to the sons of the concubines, which Abraham had. And while he was still living, he sent them eastward away from Isaac his son to the country of the east. He didn't want them hanging around where Isaac was. This is the sum of the years of Abraham's life which he lived, 175 years. Then Abraham breathed his last and died in a good old age, an old man and full of years, and was gathered to his people. And his sons Isaac and Ishmael buried him in the cave of Machpelah, which is before Mamre, in the field of Ephron, the son of Zohar, the Hittite, the field which Abraham purchased from the sons of Heth. There Abraham was buried, and Sarah his wife. And it came to pass, after the death of Abraham, that God blessed his son Isaac, and Isaac dwelt at Beer Lahai Roy. Not quite as easy as saying things like in Newcastle and Birmingham and Coventry and Worcester. Now, this is the genealogy of Ishmael, Abraham's son, whom Hagar the Egyptian, Sarah's maidservant, bore to Abraham. And these were the names of the sons of Ishmael by their names, according to their generations. The firstborn of Ishmael, Nebajoth, then Kedar, Adbeel, Mibsam, Mishma, Duma, Massa, Hadar, Tema, Jeter, Naphish, and Kedima. These were the sons of Ishmael, and these were their names by their towns and their settlements, 12 princes according to their nations. So there were 12 of them, each a prince, and each gave birth, if you like, to nations. These were the years of the life of Ishmael, 137 years, and he breathed his last and died and was gathered to his people. They dwelt from Havilah as far as Shur, which is east of Egypt as you go toward Assyria. And he died in the presence of all his brethren. So that tells us about Ishmael. And then we move on now to the serious business of Abraham's descendants through Isaac, and ultimately, of course, Jacob and Joseph and so on. This is a genealogy of Isaac, Abraham's son. Abraham begot Isaac. Isaac was 40 years old when he took Rebekah as wife, the daughter of Bethuel, the Syrian of Padan Aram, the sister of Laban the Syrian. Now Isaac pleaded with the Eternal for his wife because she was barren. Just as Abraham and Sarah had problems, it seems that Isaac and Rebekah had problems. And the Eternal granted his plea, and Rebekah his wife conceived. But the children struggled together within her. And she said, "If all is well, why am I this way?" So she went to inquire of the Eternal. And the Eternal said to her, "Two nations are in your womb. Two peoples shall be separated from your body. One people shall be stronger than the other, and the older, strangely enough, shall serve the younger." So when her days were fulfilled for her to give birth, indeed, there were twins in her womb. And the first came out red. This would be the elder, of course. He was like a hairy garment all over. So they called his name Esau, which means hairy. Afterward, his brother came out, and his hand took hold of Esau's heel. So his name was called Jacob, which means a supplanter or deceitful, the one who grabs you by the heel. Isaac was 60 years old when she bore them. So we can tell from that that it was 20 years after they got married, 20 years of waiting, 20 years of praying, 20 years of agonizing, but finally twins have arrived, so a double blessing. But interesting that, you know, you do get family squabbles from time to time. Most families seem to have them. But this pair started squabbling before they were even born. Even in the womb, they were struggling and fighting, and it seemed to continue for a while afterwards. So the boys grew. Esau was a skillful hunter, a man of the field, but Jacob was a mild man, dwelling in tents. One was a great adventurer, the explorer. You know, if he goes on a horse and disappearing for days and days on end, whereas, you know, Jacob, much more content to remain at home and ponder and think, and perhaps the more intellectual of the two. And Isaac loved Esau because he ate of his game. But Rebekah loved Jacob. And again, not great in a sense in a family to have favoritism of this sort, where, you know, Esau knew that Isaac preferred him, and Jacob knew that Rebekah preferred him. And so you got slight little bit of division there among twins who in any event were busy fighting before they were born. Now Jacob cooked a stew, and Esau came in from the field, and he was weary. And Esau said to Jacob, "Please feed me with that same red stew, for I am weary." Therefore his name was also called Edom. So, I mean, nicknames are not something particularly new. And because he fancied this red stew, he was called Red. But Jacob said, "Oh, I'll tell you what. I'll sell you a bowl of this stew in exchange for the birthright," which you got to say is absolutely, you know, cheeky beyond belief. And only a moron of the highest order would accept such a deal. But Esau appears to be in that category, and Esau says, "Well, look, I'm dying of starvation. You know, I can't survive another half hour. What profit shall this birthright be to me?" Then Jacob said, "Swear to me as of this day." So he swore to him and sold his birthright to Jacob. And Jacob gave Esau bread and stew of lentils. Then he ate and drank, arose, and cleared off. Thus Esau despised his birthright. And that's the astonishing thing. I mean, Jacob was a deceitful, devious, underhanded supplanter, you know, by name and nature. But Esau was just plain stupid, because the birthright blessings were worth, I mean, don't forget, we know what Abraham was like. His wealth was beyond compare. Where did it go to? Isaac. So we're talking here about immense wealth. And here's Esau, to whom by right of birth, as the firstborn, it belongs. And the guy says, forget that for a lark. Just give me a bowl of that that stew, a Kit Kat, and a glass of Coca-Cola, and you can have the birthright blessings. So it's certainly the case that, you know, Jacob recognized, shall we say, true wealth and wanted it, and Esau was just a bit of a Dummkopf. So carrying on to chapter 26. There was famine in the land besides the first famine that was in the days of Abraham. So I guess the cycle was that every so often you'd get a sort of drought coming into this particular part of the world, and it came back again. And Isaac went to Abimelech, king of the Philistines in Gerar or Gerar, and Abimelech, just like the term Pharaoh, just means king. Then the Eternal appeared to him and said, do not go down to Egypt, dwell in the land of which I shall tell you. Sojourn in this land, and I will be with you and bless you, for to you and your descendants I give all these lands, and I will perform the oath which I swore to Abraham your father, and I will make your descendants multiply as the stars of heaven. I will give to your descendants all these lands, and in your seed, singular, all the nations of the earth shall be blessed. So we can see here that the blessings of race and grace aren't with Ishmael, aren't with the sons of Keturah. They are, if you like, through the son of promise. They are through Isaac. And God's saying, look, Isaac, this is what you'll do, and the blessings of race and grace will belong to you and to your descendants, not the rest of your family scattered around the Middle East. Because, verse 5, Abraham obeyed my voice and kept my charge, my commandments, my statutes, and my laws. And that's, again, a very interesting verse, because there are a number of people who will tell you that there were no laws until Moses and Mount Sinai. But God says here, and I think I'd rather believe God than these other teachers, God says Abraham kept his commandments. What commandments? Kept his statutes. What statutes? Kept his laws. What laws? You know, the laws of God go all the way back. They just explain, really, how God lives. I mean, it's been against the law to murder since Adam and Eve were created. It's been against the law to commit adultery since the Garden of Eden. It's been against the law to steal since the Garden of Eden. And so we can tell here that Abraham pleased God, because Abraham kept God's charge, his commandments, all of them, his statutes, and his laws. Carrying on, verse 6. So Isaac dwelt in Gerar. And the men of the place asked him about his wife. And he said, oh, she's my sister. Strange how things run in families. For he was afraid to say, she's my wife, because he thought, lest the men of the place should kill me for Rebekah, because she's beautiful to behold. So, you know, same old story. What goes around comes around. And the one thing we learn from history is we never learn from history. You'd have thought, perhaps, Isaac would have learned some of these stories from his dad, but he hadn't. Then it came to pass, verse 8, when he had been there a long time, that Abimelech, king of the Philistines, looked through a window and saw, and there was Isaac showing endearment to Rebekah, his wife, or caressing, or I think the King James might say sporting. So I think we can use our imaginations there. But anyway, Isaac and Rebekah are spotted carrying on out there in a way that wouldn't be normal unless you were husband and wife. Then Abimelech called Isaac and said, quite obviously she is your wife. So how could you say she's my sister? And Isaac said to him, well, because I said, lest I die on account of her. So Isaac wasn't being entirely true, too trusting here of his protection from God, finding his own human way of dealing with the issue, as Abraham had done in his turn. And it is just one of our failings that we often think we know a smart way of doing things, and we set out on a path that can occasionally lead to ruin, because we don't really look to God for his protection and for his guidance. We don't ask him which things we should do. We just carry on and end up often in severe trouble, and then ask God, of course, to bail us out. You know, so God, please bless my mess. But it's probably wiser to seek God's guidance first and not get into a mess. Anyway, carrying on, verse 10, and Abimelech said, what is this you have done to us? One of the people might soon have lain with your wife, and you would have brought guilt on us, because Abimelech knew that adultery was a major sin. So Abimelech charged all his people, saying, he who touches this man or his wife shall surely be put to death. So he's taking this rather seriously. Verse 12. Then Isaac sowed in that land and reaped in the same year a hundredfold, and the Eternal blessed him. So, I mean, you can see that you start off pretty blessed anyway, and you sow in the land, and a hundredfold, 30, not 60, but a full hundredfold blessing. The man began to prosper and continued prospering until he became very prosperous. For he had possessions of flocks and possessions of herds and a great number of servants. So the Philistines envied him. I don't know what a great number is, whether that means 1,000 or 2,000. I mean, this Isaac was like immensely a powerful individual. What his personal guard was like, anybody knows. So the Philistines envied him. Now the Philistines had stopped up all the wells which his father's servants had dug in the days of Abraham his father, and they had filled them with earth. And clearly there were battles being fought over water supplies and water rights. And so it looks like since the days when Abraham's servants had dug these wells, they'd been stuffed with mud by the Philistines. And Abimelech said to Isaac, go away from us, for you are much mightier than we. Then Isaac departed from there and pitched his tent in the valley of Gerar and dwelt there. And Isaac dug again the wells of water which they had dug in the days of Abraham his father, for the Philistines had stopped them up after the death of Abraham. He called them by the names which his father had called them. And obviously he'd know the names fairly well, because he would probably had helped dig some of them himself. And so he renamed them with the same names that they had in the days of Abraham. Also, Isaac's servants dug in the valley and found a well of running water there. But the herdsmen of Gerar quarreled with Isaac's herdsmen, saying, "The water's ours!" So he called the name of the well Esek, because they quarreled with him there. Then they dug another well, and they quarreled over that one also. So he called its name Sitna, which means, you know, enmity or argument. And so you can see that water was a very important measure of wealth in those days. And if you had water, it meant, you know, power and influence. And so they were struggling and fighting and feuding over water supplies. And he moved from there and dug another well, and they did not quarrel over it. So he called his name Rehoboth, because he said, "For now the Eternal has made room for us, and we shall be fruitful in the land." Then he went up from there to Beersheba. And the Eternal appeared to him the same night and said, "I am the God of your father Abraham. Do not fear, for I am with you." And of course that would be something we could all learn from. If God is for us, who can be against us? And really, with God on our side, we should not be fearful. And that's what God's saying, "Yeah, look, you know, Isaac, I'm with you. Don't be afraid. I will bless you and multiply your descendants for my servant Abraham's sake." So he built an altar there and called in the name of the Eternal, and he pitched his tent there, and there Isaac's servants dug a well. Then Abimelech came to him from Gerar with Ahuzath, one of his friends, and Phicol, the commander of his army. And Isaac said to him, "Why have you come to me, since you hate me and have sent me away from you?" But they said, "We have certainly seen that the Eternal is with you." So we said, "Let there now be an oath between us, between you and us, and let us make a covenant with you, that you will do us no harm, since we have not touched you, and since we have done nothing to you but good, and have sent you away in peace. You are now the blessed of the Eternal." And really, you know, Abram and Isaac were so blessed that probably the whole New Testament world virtually knew of it. They'd have been famous, I'm sure, for hundreds and hundreds of miles. So he made them a feast, and they ate and drank. Then they arose early in the morning and swore an oath with one another, and Isaac sent them away, and they departed from him in peace. It came to pass the same day that Isaac's servants came and told him about the well which they had dug, and he said to him, "We have found water." So he called it Sheba. Therefore, the name of the city is Beersheba to this day. When Esau was 40 years old, he took his wives Judith, the daughter of Beeri the Hittite, or Beeri, an unfortunate nickname these days, Beeri the Hittite, and Basemath, the daughter of Elon the Hittite, and they were a grief of mind to Isaac and Rebekah, because, Isaac and Rebekah obviously wanted the best, you know, for their twin sons. And the last thing really they wanted was Esau, you know, marrying into the Hittites. Remember, Abraham had been so concerned about Isaac, that he'd sent his servant, you know, all the way back to his own homeland to bring back, you know, a virgin wife from that area. And no doubt the intention would have been, well, let's keep it in the family and we'll go back and some of our, you know, family over there can be the wives of Esau and Jacob. But Esau took matters into his own hand and in fact took two wives, Judith, you know, and Basemath. And it says that they were grief of mind to Isaac and Rebekah. I think that probably, you listen to the next chapter, but it seems a bit on the lengthy side, and there's lots of activity in the next chapter too. So I think rather than carry on any further, we've made pretty good progress. We are now surely just looking at how long it's going to be. Genesis is 50 chapters long, so we're just slightly over the halfway mark, which is sort of encouraging on the one hand, but taking us a while to get there. But hopefully we'll make good progress next time. So we'll leave it there with the story of Jacob about to come into prominence, and we'll see next time how the blessings of race and grace, which are huge blessings of great importance even to us today, how they pass down next into the life of Jacob. And we'll pick up the story there next time.